The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Hello, welcome in to our Wednesday edition of the Leach Report on another rainy day. Glad to have you guys on board with us today as we get a little closer to the news content picking up significantly. It's that late summertime when there's not a lot going on for the Wildcats yet, but soon, next week, actually, that will all change because you'll have football practices going on daily and news coming out of there, and you'll have these games in the Bahamas. As John Calipari will tinker with combinations and groups, and I'm really interested to see, to kind of get a little insight into what he's thinking when he puts groups out there. I'm watching practice, and he's doing a lot of that, but that's normal, and he's doing it within scrimmage situations. This will be against outside competition, so what are the fives, the groups of fives that he puts out there, and which ones really click? So it'll be fun to see down in the Bahamas. We'll talk about that Bahamas trip to lead off the show today with Todd Lander, who was on the team that went there in 2014, and it turned out to be a very positive experience from a team chemistry standpoint. So we'll talk to him about that and what the benefit of this trip can be. Chris Fisher always with us on Wednesdays, and a lot of recruiting things going on to talk about. And John Hale from the Courier-Journal, and he's got a story up, came out yesterday at the CJ, about some key position battles and who he thinks will win. And obviously quarterback is right at the top of the list of those subjects. So that's what we'll get into on the show today. Our guest lineup each day is presented by Sleep Outfitters. You can interact with us via Twitter @LeachReport. It's email leachreport@gmail.com, or you can call 877-904-1080, toll-free anywhere in Kentucky. Today is an open practice day for the Wildcat basketball team. They're going to let the media in to watch practice. There'll be some interviews, so we'll have a little content coming out of that. You got John Calipari's Draft Academy that's going on. It's some of his former players back working with kids at that. Jared Vanderbilt were at practice yesterday, and they talked with reporters yesterday. Vanderbilt told Jerry Tipton, the Herald Leader, about how he was grateful Cal gave him the encouragement, the confidence to go on to the NBA because of some of the health concerns. Jared ultimately, it looks like, made the right decision to get that 3-year deal with Denver. Because of the uncertainty about that that foot, had he come back and then gotten hurt, he might not have had he would have had fewer, if any, options. And so now he's in a situation where he's got to get some money, and then if he can prove himself, he'll get a whole bunch more money. So that was one interesting thing that came out of the media discussions yesterday. DJ Jeffrey's dad, I'm sure saw this story, was on a radio show in Memphis. Said Kentucky was, quote, unprofessional in its reaction to DJ's decommitment. He later said it was an assistant and not Cal that he was referencing. I think you can certainly look for a lot of attention on a supposed Cal and Penny rivalry. And the extent to which there is a rivalry is for just recruiting kids in Memphis until Penny proves anything. I don't think he's going to make much of an impact anywhere else, but he is clearly a force in Memphis, and that's big news because that's where one of the top players in 2019 is from, in James Wiseman. So that'll be an ongoing story to follow, and we'll talk a little bit about that with Chris Fisher when he joins us here in a bit. Otherwise, we're going to get to a break and then come back and visit with Todd Lander and get a little take on going to the Bahamas and what that was like for his team, what it did for that team that ultimately won 38 straight games. That's when we got our first look at the platoon system. I don't think you'll see that this year, although this is a similarly deep team. Not quite as deep as that one, but close. We'll be right back on the Leach Report Radio Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Welcome back into the show. Todd Lander joins us to talk a little bit about this Bahamas trip, the Wildcats, because you and your team went down there in 2014, played six games, stayed for 9 days, and everybody always talks about the bonding experience and the chemistry that can be achieved through something like this. Todd, did you guys feel that it was significant to what that team did, that trip to the Bahamas?
Absolutely. It was immeasurable, the amount of bonding we were able to get on that trip. It was a 10-day trip for us. I think we're only there for 8 this time, but not that, that matters. We got to know the guys. We'd only been together for 2 weeks or so before that. Only had a few practice days. That's another big thing, though. It allows you to practice an extra 2 weeks, I believe, in the season, or ahead of the season, to prepare for that trip. So we were able to get started earlier that summer. And then we switched up roommates on that trip so we could get to know all the guys pretty early. And, it was definitely special.
Interesting. So the Cal had you change who your roommate was from the lodge, right?
Yes. He put us with different guys and kind of like I remember the Titans situation, forced to seat with different people. Not forced, but it was
encouraged.
He intentionally got us around each other and got us comfortable with one another. We had a lot of, we were very young, but we had a lot of age discrepancy on that team compared to his normal teams. We had three seniors that year, even though we were walk-ons. We had Alex and Willie, who were juniors. It got us around each other and allowed some of the older guys to pass some wisdom down to the younger guys about how difficult it is to play at that level, even though they've been up against that kind of elite talent for years growing up. It just allowed us to have a bit of an impact on them before they were thrown feet to the fire during the season.
And I assume down there you didn't have any academic obligations. Classes hadn't started yet, so when you weren't doing something practice related, weren't having to shoot around, occasional meetings, but you got a significant amount of free time to hang out together, right?
Absolutely, and that was the fun part for us was, normally our days are centered around, if we have a game, the game's obviously usually in the evening. Practice is usually at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so most of our days at home or traveling are centered around basketball. The meals are in preparation for the upcoming game or practice later in the day. We're trying to knock out academic obligations before that usually. And the Bahamas trip, just like you said, was different. It was the opposite. We were getting up, having an early shoot around in the morning. The games were at noon. We were done by 2:30 or so in the afternoon. And then the rest of the day was ours. We go to the pool. We went to the beach. We did a lot of fun activities together. Had big, elaborate meals where we didn't have to worry about how much we were eating because we didn't have to play later that night. So that was fun. It allowed us to cut loose. And, after the basketball was done for the day, we were able to kind of put our feet up and enjoy each other and get to know our coaching staff and everybody a little bit more on a personal level.
When you look at this year's team, it's a similarly deep team, not as deep as that group. And you guys obviously had the famous platoon system, but I mean, you had, if memory serves, it was like 12 deep because ultimately everybody got healthy. I think Willie and Trey, if memory serves, were not participating in the games down in the Bahamas, but you still had 10 deep roster to go with. And when you look at this team, Cal said he's not going to platoon again, but he will, I think, tinker with a lot of different combinations down there. It won't just be formal platooning, but I think you'll see him. You kind of get some insight, I would think, into what maybe he's thinking. Let's try this group together. Let's try these two guards together. Let's try this pair of bigs together, etc. Right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure we'll have the fan base freak out a little bit, expecting the platoon system to happen again based on his substitution techniques in the Bahamas because. I mean, you've been in practice thousands of times and seen how practice goes. He'll call a timeout and switch three guys or five guys or, you know, jump everybody around, and he'll absolutely do that in the Bahamas. He wants to see, not only does he want to see certain groups together, but he wants to see how certain guys react to being on what you would consider the second team. And you know, do they step up and beat out the guy for their spot that he's putting in front of them? And he does that in practice. He'll do it in the Bahamas, and he's dealing with guys' character more than he is, or not more than, but just as much as he is their ability to play. And he wants to see those combinations together. He wants to see who's most effective at where on the floor, and sometimes that is a better fit with a different group.
Practices are going to be wars, I would think, for this team this season.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to see them a couple of times. I'm hoping to get down there again after this trip and see them a little bit more, so I have a better insight to these questions when I come on in the future. But the workouts especially have been incredible. I mean, these guys realize that they're fighting for playing time. And, you know, if he doesn't do the platoon system again, there's going to be some guys on this, you know, 12-man rotation that are playing 3 and 5 minutes a game instead of 12 to 15. And nobody wants to be that guy. So that ability to push each other is what's going to drive this team to be great. And like you said, we are too deep at every position. We were too deep at every position my senior year because of the rotation. We were because of the platoon system. This team is too deep in a very different way. They have guys that fill voids in the way we didn't. I think they're going to be able to shoot the ball really well. And I'm really excited to see the dynamic of who he puts out there together again. I think some players will certainly bring out the best in others.
Who do you think the leaders will be for this team? I'll put it that way.
I honestly don't know how to answer that question. I hope PJ Washington steps into his role. I haven't been around enough to answer that intelligently, but I really feel like PJ Washington has the resume to do so. Coming back for another year, having, you know, dipped his toe in the NBA water, done the work it takes to be successful coming into a sophomore season at this kind of at an elite level. I'm really looking forward to see if his attitude's changed. Not that he had a bad attitude before, but you could tell he was a little more timid than everyone expected. I think if he comes out with a killer instinct, maybe like a Terrence Jones sophomore year, I think that'll change this team a lot.
I would think some of those leadership, issues, because it's not a negative thing. I think, you know, it'll happen, but leadership questions start to get answered with a situation like this, where you're 8 days away from home. You're just playing these four games. You spend a lot of time together. Some of those leaders will start to emerge, I would think, right?
I think a lot of these young guys will see it as an opportunity to step up. I mean, they'll have a lot of guys in their ear, you know, outside influences, I guess I would say, family members and old teammates and stuff that are going to be in their ear saying, look, this is your chance. You know, it's Kentucky. Everybody's kind of laid back. The games really don't matter. Like, here's your chance. Go out there and show them what you can do. There's not much you can lose. And, you know, honestly, at this time of year, that's great. Like, they don't have anything to lose. Go out there and show us what you can do and, you know, take that role and embrace it. And if there's a maturity level in some of these younger guys that are able to kind of put their, you know, timidness aside and go out there and perform the way they know they can, I think we'll see a lot of confidence boosts in these kids early. And if they're able to establish that kind of a mentality before we get into the grind of the season, I think that'll be huge for them mentally.
It'll be fun too. I mean, Cal can, because these will be like real games. It won't be where he'll, you know, sometimes in a blue-white game, he'll stop and go out on the court and coach something up. This will be with officials and an actual game. So if he wants to coach you up on something, he'll take you out and coach you up, maybe put you back in. But it's going to be interesting. You're going to see a lot of that, I think, and then how the guys respond to that and who embraces it, who picks things up most rapidly and then puts it into execution. That's what's going to be fun to watch.
I agree. And forewarning to any fans listening in, it's going to be ugly. I mean, they're going to be running like crazy. They'll probably be fumbling balls. It's not going to look pretty well executed basketball, but he's going to have them running hard and sticking to the same core set of plays. And he just wants to see how they're going to compete. And, like you just said, I think we'll have some guys step up and show that they can be, you know, who's going to be the Dominique Hawkins, the energy yeah. bringer, who's going to be in somebody's face on defense, who's going to step up and lead the team and, you know, play without fouling if it comes down to the wire and, you know, take care of the ball and not, you know, get in rush. Like he always says, be able to, you know, play at 100%, but slow your mind down to 70 so you can think through everything. And we'll start to see a little bit of those kinds of things on a trip like this. It's too early to see how we're going to play offensively and how we're going to play defensively. He has no idea what he's going to do with that yet. But, you know, this is when he'll start to figure out where to put guys in a position to make this team successful.
Todd, appreciate the time. We'll holler back at you after this is over and get some post-Bahamas thoughts. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for reaching out.
Todd Lanter, former Wildcat, joining us here on the Leach Report. We'll be right back. Chris Fisher, next up.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach, KY.
Chris Fisher joins us from catspaws.com. We'll start with the DJ Jeffries story. Chris, did that come as a shock to you, or did you think that was possible?
Initially, I definitely took it as a shock. I mean, when you go 10 years and 58 commitments without a decommitment, which is pretty remarkable in and of itself, I think it was surprising in that regard. But if you look at the other guys Kentucky is recruiting in the 2019 class, hosting Dante Allen for an unofficial visit today, hosting Khalil Whitney for an official visit this weekend, makes it a little less surprising, I guess. And I point to that maybe more so than the Penny Hardaway Memphis dynamic, which a lot of people are pointing to, and I'm not discounting, but I think it had a little bit more to do with, you know, maybe Kentucky recruiting other guys at that position.
Interesting. So do you think it's a lock that he goes to Memphis?
I don't think it's a lock. I think all signs are pointing that direction, and I definitely think that's where his father would like him to end up. And there's the James Wiseman, you know, situation that's in play as well. But, you know, in the same way that I don't think DJ Jeffries would have delivered James Wiseman to Kentucky if he were to go to Memphis, I don't think it guarantees that Wiseman will sign with Memphis either.
Yeah, we'll pick up a little bit on that when we come back. We're coming up on a hard break at the bottom of the hour. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. Chris Fisher's with us from catspaws.com. You can follow him on Twitter at ChrisFisher247. Second half of the show when we come right back.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Back with Chris Fisher from catspaws.com, talking some basketball recruiting. You were referencing James Wiseman just ahead of the last break, and that was the first fear when Jeffries decommitted that many Kentucky fans had. He would be going to Memphis, and he would be taking James Wiseman with him. What is the dynamic of their relationship as you know it?
Yeah, you know, I really don't think they're particularly close. Obviously, they play on the same AAU travel team, and they're friends, but I don't think they're, you know, bus friends or anything like that. I definitely don't think it was any kind of package deal, and I don't think DJ Jeffries' decision to decommit and whether he goes to Memphis or not is going to any way affect the decision of James Wiseman. I mean, he's the number one overall player in the country, and he's going to do what he wants to do. And on top of that, he's a very quiet, shy kid. He doesn't really share his plans with anybody, and so at the end of the day, he's going to do, you know, what he wants to do, regardless of what, you know, or where DJ Jeffries decides to go.
Dante Allen from Pendleton County in, down in Falmouth is visiting today. Khalil Whitney at the end of the week, this I think Friday through Sunday, he's going to be making a visit to Kentucky. Do you expect that both end up in Kentucky blue?
Yeah, at this point I would be surprised if both of those guys don't ultimately choose Kentucky. They may, you know, go through the recruiting process a little bit further and explore maybe some other visits or whatnot. But at the end of the day, I definitely think Kentucky is going to land both of those guys. John Calipari really took a liking to Khalil Whitney, was scouting him firsthand throughout the month of July and really fell in love with him and his game. And you look at what Dante Allen did during the month of July as well, rising up, you know, 70 spots in the national rankings, adding, you know, double digit high major offers, and really I think went from being a luxury for Kentucky in the 2019 class to a must have. And not that John Calipari would ever allow the fans to run his program, but it certainly doesn't hurt that Dante Allen is from Kentucky, and I know Kentucky fans have really been thirsting for Kentucky to sign a kid from inside the state. And so covers a lot of bases there if Kentucky were to be able to do that.
And he has just had an incredible summer, has he not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, led the 78-team Under Armour Challenge event in Atlanta in scoring, and was right up there in rebounds and assists as well. I think Kentucky really likes his overall game and ability to do a lot of different things with the ball in his hands. He can shoot it, he can score it, he can get in the lane, get guys involved, and like I said, I think he went from kind of being a potential throw-in for Kentucky in 2019 to a guy that they really wanted. And so he'll be on campus today, and I would be very surprised if he didn't have a scholarship offer in hand when he leaves Lexington today.
Who are other names that Kentucky fans should be paying attention to as the push to 2019 signing class continues?
I think Cole Anthony is probably at the top of that list. I think he certainly solidified himself as maybe the top point guard or guard prospect in the 2019 class, and doesn't really say much about his recruitment, especially as far as specific schools are concerned. So it's really hard to say how deep Kentucky is in with him. I think Jaden McDaniels, the decommitment of DJ Jeffries, I think opens the door even further for Kentucky to get involved with him. At one point said that Kentucky was his dream school and, you know, really liked watching Kentucky play when they had John Wall and those guys. And so he's another guy that has really blown up this summer, has transformed himself into a top five prospect in the class. And if he's a guy that, you know, is already high on Kentucky, even without the scholarship offer, I definitely think he's one that that Kentucky could go after as well. And four-star center Oscar Tshiebwe really manhandled James Wiseman at an event earlier this month, named his top eight yesterday. I think Kentucky is still kicking the tires on him and kind of depending on where the chips fall here over the next couple of weeks. Wouldn't be surprised to see a scholarship offer extended in his direction as well.
Cal unveiled some new unis for the Bahamas trip they'll use for the four games down there. Any fan reaction to those on through the Cat's Paw site?
Well, I know the fans are steadfastly against the checkerboard. So the fact that they don't have the checkerboard, I think, in the eyes of fans is an upgrade. I definitely like the blue on black. I think that's a really slick look and something that younger fans have been clamoring for. I know some of the older fans would like Kentucky to stick to the traditional blue and white, but I think it's fun to kind of mix things up, and I think the black certainly gets the job done there.
Chris, I appreciate the time. When we talk next Wednesday, we'll be looking at a little preview of the first game down in the Bahamas, so we will chat with you then.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Tom.
Chris Fisher from CatsPaws.com, 20 away from the top of the hour here on this Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. I don't know what's going on over at Sleep Outfitters, but you ought to get there before they come to their senses. Right now, you can purchase any size mattress, the king, the queen, the full, or the twin, for the price of a twin. Sealy luxury pillow top mattresses with gel foam, just $299. You can get a king size for just $299. On top of that, receive a discount equal to the sales tax on select Sealy and Sealy Posturepedic mattresses. Just incredible deals right now. If your kid's going back to college, they'll ship to any college around the country. So fantastic deals at Sleep Outfitters and at sleepoutfitters.com. Be right back with John Hale from the Courier-Journal, talking about his story on the UK football key position battles. We'll get into that when we return on the Leach Report Radio Network.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
16 away from the top of the hour, John Hale joins us from the Courier Journal to talk about, among other things, the story he posted yesterday on some key position battles that will unfold over the course of this month as the Wildcats go through their training camp in preparation for the opener on September 1st against Central Michigan. And obviously, John, at the top of the list is the quarterback battle. You think ultimately the indecision makes it more likely that it's Terry Wilson?
Yeah, I mean, I think Gunner's, you know, most kind of obvious benefit in this battle is that he's more familiar with the playbook. He's been here for 2 years, even though he hasn't played. So he should know a little bit more than Terry Wilson in terms of scheme. And the longer it goes on, the, you know, closer that gap's going to get. Obviously, Terry's still going to have a learning adjustment no matter how long until he gets in games. But with no other quarterback who's been in games either, I think that becomes less of a factor the longer they go. And then maybe at that point, Terry's legs and his ability to make plays on the run and the read option and all the things we saw Steven Johnson do at times gives him a little bit of an edge up.
How likely do you think it might be that they could start out with playing both of them?
Yeah, I think that's really likely, especially with Central Michigan the first week and the experience issue being such a concern in terms of no one having game action. And Mark has mentioned a couple times that it's not really even sure you can see all that Terry Wilson can do until you put him in the game action, because you don't have your quarterbacks get hit in practice, and that eliminates some of his running ability. So I'd frankly be surprised if they don't both play in the first game. Who starts, I think, will still tell us a lot, but I would think both those guys are going to play week one and maybe week two, although Florida is a much more difficult task, obviously. But that first month of the season, I would think you would try and get both guys as much experience as possible.
Yeah, it's the closer we get, the more that does seem like, it would seem very obvious that you would maybe do that in the opener against Central Michigan, especially if it goes well, get off to a good start. But even throughout the conference games that follow there in the month of September, they're going to be, they have so many known quantities around them. It's an interesting situation. So many known qualities around them and the huge unknown at quarterback as far as how somebody's going to perform under the lights.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen, you know, repeatedly throughout Kentucky football in recent history and in longer history that you don't make it through the season with one quarterback very often, whether it's a series here, a series there, a game, whatever. You need your backup to play meaningful snaps at some point in the year, and I just don't think you want to go into a position 6 or 7 games in the year where you have to turn to another guy who's never played in a game before, doesn't have really any meaningful experience if whoever wins the starting job gets hurt or something else happens that knocks them out of a game.
How much use do you think Coach Stoops will make of the new rule where you can play freshmen a few games before making a redshirt decision?
Yeah, I think they'll use it heavily, and I would expect all teams to do it. I think there's a few different categories you would put guys in. Obviously, there are some guys who are going to play from day one. I would think Chance Poor, the kicker, Chris Oates, the linebacker, a wide receiver, too, probably one of the running backs, are all in that category. They would have played no matter what. But you've got other guys that you can play early and see if you need them. And inside linebacker stands out to me in that spot in terms of you don't have any real experience depth behind Cash Daniel and Jordan Jones. So play both Chris Oates and DeAndre Square for the first couple of games. See who makes a difference on special teams. See if maybe some of your redshirt freshmen emerge and you don't need one of those guys, then you can redshirt him later in the season. But then they'll also use it the other way, where there will be guys who are obviously not ready in camp And maybe you don't automatically relegate them to scout team like you would in the past. You keep preparing them throughout the year, like we saw with Nasir Watkins last year, who didn't end up playing. But then the last month of the season, when you've got four games left, if that guy's ready to play now and you've got injuries or he can boost you in a position of need, then you can play him down the stretch and it can make a big difference in maybe going to a bowl game or not.
Second on your list of position battles, and it's one that really doesn't generate much talk because there's so much discussion on the quarterback one, is Kentucky has neither a punter nor a place kicker with much experience. And I say much. Grant McInnis has punted a little bit, and Miles Butler's kicked even a little less.
Yeah, I think it's a big concern. I think it's getting overlooked too much because we know how many close games Kentucky's played the last couple of years as they've gone to these bowl games. And it was such a nice kind of comfort, you know, blanket to have for Mark Stoops to know that Austin McInnis was down there and it could come into the end of the game and hit up to, you know, 55 yards or whatever and feel comfortable in that position. They're not going to be in that situation early in the year. And I think they're really high on Chance Poor, the freshman and his potential, but he's going to take some time to learn. And Miles Butler has more than held his own. And I know Mark's been really high on some of the selfless stuff he's done in terms of that game. He punted last year and did a pretty good job at that too, but I don't know that he has a leg to you know, shine in the situations Austin did. So that's a concern. And then at punter, Grant obviously struggled quite a bit the year he was the starter and lost that job last year, and Matt Penn was such a weapon that you hope maybe you get some of the same in Max Duffy because they have similar backgrounds with the Australian football. But he's never played American football competitively, so that's going to be an adjustment too. And how good their punt team and their coverage teams were last year, I think, gets overlooked quite a bit. If you don't have those known quantities and special teams, those close games become much more difficult to win.
And you would, on paper anyway, looking at this, if Kentucky has the kind of season they want to have, they're going to have to win probably several close games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would think that at some point in conference play, I mean, we've seen those, the South Carolinas, the Missouris, the Vanderbilts, the Mississippi States of the world that Kentucky has been relatively close to the last couple of years, and they've won most of those games, but it's not been by a huge margin very often, and those teams are all very close. They've gotten better. Kentucky's gotten better, but the margin of victory between Kentucky and the other teams in the East outside of Georgia is not wide enough that you would feel comfortable picking them to win, you know, by two or three touchdowns pretty much in any game, I wouldn't think. So there are going to be a lot of close games both ways.
Next on your list was outside linebacker, and Denzel Ware's transfer makes this a very question, much of a question mark position. Boogie Watson's a guy that's, you know, flashed at times, as to use the coach's terms, but nobody has much proven performance there.
Yeah, and we've heard Boogie in that category that Mark talks about a lot in terms of being one of their best 11, so they've moved him around to try and get him on the field, and he didn't have a real obvious position when he was blocked by Denzel and Josh Allen and an inside linebacker by Courtney Love and Jordan Jones last year. So they moved him around. I think there's a real possibility that he ends up being an upgrade over Denzel in the long term, but I don't think it's fair to expect that right away for a guy who's played a bunch of different positions, who hasn't had a ton of experience, who's going to be learning to be counted on as a starter full-time. And then there are other redshirt freshmen in Jordan Wright and Chris Whitaker and some guys who might push him at that position. Maybe they move Josh Pascal back out there at times, even though I think it seems like he's set at the line now. But it's going to be a, you know, a learning curve for Boogie, I would expect. But I do think there's hope at that spot that in the long term he ends up being as good, if not better, than Denzel Ware.
The backup running back position is one of the ones on your list, too, with A.J. Rose and Saheem King battling for carries behind Benny. It was heavily weighted in terms of number of carries for Benny last season, and Saheem got a few. Year before, it was split, not equally, but split with three guys. Do you think it's closer to that 2016 model this year?
Yeah, I think we get closer to that area in terms of what we're going to see this year. I still expect Benny to probably take, you know, 70% of the carries if he's healthy the whole year. But I think it's the best case scenario for Kentucky if they have, whether it's King, whether it's Rose, whether it's one of the freshmen emerge, to really spell Benny at times, because running backs only have so many carries in their body before they get hurt. And they've been really lucky to this point with Benny that even with his kind of running style where he runs through, looks for contact and runs through tacklers all the time, he hasn't really had a major injury at Kentucky, and you just, I don't know, you can count on that very long. So if they're winning games, if they have other guys who are productive, And that saves Benny down the stretch. It saves him for those situations where you really needed to. And it seems like Benny has gotten to the point, maturity-wise, where he acknowledges that too and knows he needs some help out there. So if A.J. Rose can emerge, can play like he did in the spring game, if Shaheem King can get healthy and give you that kind of change of pace option as a scat back kind of guy, I think that's good for Kentucky in the long run.
You included the outside receiver position on this list. Who do you think is the guy that has a breakout season among that group of players if one happens?
I mean, if Dorian Baker's healthy, I assume he's probably their best receiver again, but there's going to be rust there. The guy I really think to watch is Isaiah Epps. He didn't do a ton last year, but he's their best speed threat down the field. I think if he's made the progression you would expect from year one to year two, he could be a kind of Jeff Badette guy for this offense in terms of what we saw a couple of years ago where he was, Jeff went, like sixth in the country in yards per catch because he was getting the ball down the field so often. And I think it's important to note that Isaiah and Terry Wilson are both Oklahoma guys, have both spent a lot of time together this summer. I know they went to one camp in Arizona together. That chemistry seems to be working really well there. And then obviously Gunnar Hoke, if he wins the job, has probably a better arm than Terry down the field. So I think he's a guy to watch outside for maybe a real breakout season.
And if Kentucky is as good as it hopes to be running the football, and if they're getting it in the hands of C.J. Conrad and Lynn Bowden the way they would like, then that ought to open up a few home run shots a game.
Yeah, and we saw that 2 years ago a lot. That was what Stephen Johnson was best at, his first year as starter. And for whatever reason, they just never really connected on those balls last year. But I would expect whoever wins the quarterback that to be a real point of emphasis, and especially if Benny's Benny again. And C.J. Conrad, shows what we've seen in glimpses in the passing game. I would think that outside receiver spot is going to have a lot of opportunities down the field. And those guys have to step up and make those plays, which they didn't do a year ago. But you hope with a little bit more experience, maybe a healthy Dorian Baker, that those guys can emerge now.
Story's up at courier-journal.com, or you can read it and get the insight. There's one that we didn't get to is the backup to Jordan Jones that you can read about as well. And, John, we'll see you in the Bahamas.
Thanks for having me.
John Hale, courier-journal.com, at @JohnHale_CJ on Twitter. We'll wrap it up when we come right back.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Wrapping up this Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. Tomorrow, Mike Pratt, Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated, and Jim O'Brien, who was with us earlier this year, is a longtime editor of the Street and Smith's College Basketball Yearbook, and he and some buddies did a guy's trip of hitting different sports venues around the Midwest, and they made a swing through Kentucky and got to check out one of Cal's practices. And Jim is from Pittsburgh, so he and Cal go way back. So he'll give us his take on what he saw and some of the stories. So that's coming up on tomorrow's show. We'll see you then. Have a great Wednesday.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow The Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on The Leach Report Radio Network.